It points to a time in American history 150 years ago when working for wages was a form of chattel slavery. The slogan of the Republican Party, the banner under which Northern workers went to fight in the Civil War, was, "We're against chattel slavery and wage slavery. Free people did not rent themselves to others. Freedom means not taking orders from others." It took a long time, Chomsky points out, to drive into people's heads the idea that it is legitimate to rent yourself. And once that was accomplished, we began to internalize oppression.
That's called a pregnant pause. That was Chris Hedges. Yeah, he's righteously indignant. It's indeed true. That's a talk he gave this past Monday. I think you can find it on the web fairly soon. I got it through KPFA, audioport.org. Well, I can't give you that because you need to sign on to get that. Thanks, Bill, for getting that to me so many years. Anyway, it's time for me to get out of here. It's 1 after 11. Enjoy your Saturday if you have it off. If you don't, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And unions brought us the weekend, and now we've lost it, apparently.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the May 7th, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Hour, brought to you over there by WFT 90.1 FM Radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at WFT.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour of programming are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WFT's management, board of directors, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by you listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas. We'll have some workers' interest news for us, and later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's poem for this week in honor of Mother's Day is entitled An Ode to Moms. And here with us today is also Bob Plesney and Bill Gorell. Now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers blew a hole in the Bird's Point levee near Wyatt, Missouri, just south of Cairo, Illinois, on Monday night, flooding more than 130,000 acres of farmland in Missouri's Mississippi County in a move to save nearby Cairo and to relieve flooding at the confluence of the Mississippi and Ohio rivers. After a few short explosions and flashes of orange light, the Mississippi River began pouring through a wide hole in the giant earthen levee, intentionally blown open by Army engineers trying to save the small town. The Corps of Engineers set off charges inside the levee near Cairo after nightfall last Monday, sacrificing the 130,000 acres of rich farmland, as well as about 100 homes in Missouri. A few hours after the blast, the water level at Cairo was dropping rapidly. Before the levee was breached, the river had stood at just under 62 feet and was rising. However, by Tuesday morning, it had fallen to just a hair over 60 feet and was expected to decline to 59 feet by today, Saturday. But even as the danger seemed to ease somewhat around Cairo, floodwaters were rising downriver all the way to and beyond Memphis, Tennessee, and the hole in the Bird's Point levee apparently was just not enough to address those concerns. Bob?
Okay, at a ceremony at the Department of Labor last Friday, President Obama inducted all 1,300 Memphis Sanitation 1968 strikers into the Labor Hall of Fame. Alvin Turner, a striking Memphis sanitation worker, told a crowd at the Department of Labor last Friday that he now knows what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. saw when he reached the mountaintop in Memphis and saw the promised land. Dr. King did not die in vain, he said. Turner, who's 76 years old, said King saw Turner's extended family with good careers, some with doctorate degrees, others teaching in high school, and saw, too, that I was the last uneducated person in my family. President Barack Obama met with eight of the 1968 Memphis sanitation workers at the White House on Friday. And at the afternoon ceremony, Labor Secretary Hilda Solis, the daughter of a union shop steward, said she heard the words that President Obama spoke to the workers. She heard him say, he doesn't stand alone. He stands on your shoulders. If it was not for you, he might not be our president. Solis said the 1968 strikers would be the first inducted as a group and would join individuals such as farm labor organizer Cesar Chavez, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's labor secretary Frances Perkins, International Workers of the World co-founder Mary Harris Mother Jones, A. Philip Randolph of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, and Samuel Gompers, founder of the American Federation of Labor. Right now, so many public workers are under attack, Solis said, of state legislative efforts to reduce collective bargaining rights for public employees. Joe Warren, who turned 90 this week and wore a World War II veteran's baseball cap, said from the stage, I am still a man. Dave?
Okay, I've got a story here from our good friend and comrade in New York City, Harry Kelber. total of 682,000 U.S. jobs were lost or displaced since the North American Free Trade Agreement took effect in 1994 under the Clinton administration. A new study by the Economic Policy Institute shows the main reason for the job loss is a $97.2 billion trade deficit with Mexico. In 1993, the same year before NAFTA was implemented, the United States had a $1.6 billion trade surplus with Mexico that supported nearly 39,000 U.S. jobs. All 50 states, including the District of Columbia and Peoria, Puerto Rico, have seen job losses or displaced to Mexico in the past 17 years, said Robert Scott, EPI senior international economist and author of Heading South, U.S.-Mexico Trade and Job Displacements After NAFTA. While supporters of the proposed deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama claim they will create American jobs, Scott's research shows that each trade agreement would cost jobs in the first 8 years. The current deal with South Korea could cost 150,000 jobs, and Colombia would swallow up an additional minimum 60,000 U.S. jobs, Scott predicts. The study found the five states that experienced the largest percentage of local jobs displaced by trade with Mexico since NAFTA began are Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee. Most of the lost or displaced jobs by trade with Mexico, 415,000 jobs, have been in manufacturing.
May Day rallies and marches took place all across the country last Sunday as demonstrators nationwide protested the efforts to curtail the right to collective bargaining. In New York City's Union Square, marchers walked down Broadway for a rally. In Milwaukee, demonstrators called for what they referred to as a more fair immigration policy. The marchers were joined by several hundred labor activists who said the fight for immigration rights goes hand in hand with calls for workers' rights. In Los Angeles, thousands of demonstrators marched through the downtown, waving union banners and American flags. Demonstrations in Wisconsin presented the working class with an opportunity to take a decisive stand for its own self-interest. As the economic crisis plays out, more people are seeing the need to rebuild the economy in a way that meets the needs of the masses. This is a process that must unfold with each step of the way, marked with deliberate actions of concerned people, organizers, and activists. Frederick Douglass once said, "Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will." And working folks across the nation are uniting to demand the cure for our economy. Tax the rich. Bob?
All right. Thanks, Tom. I agree. More than $186 million in federal money that Florida turned down for high-speed passenger rail has been awarded to Illinois for improvements on part of the 110-mile-per-hour corridor between Chicago and St. Louis, officials said Wednesday. The $186.4 million in new money will be used to finance track and signal improvements on the section between Dwight and Joliet, according to an announcement by U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Mark Kirk and Governor Pat Quinn. The U.S. Department of Transportation notified Congress this week that $400 million of the $2.4 billion in funding that the governor of Florida rejected has been reprogrammed to other states. Also in December, Illinois received $42.3 million in high-speed rail funding that was rejected by the governors of Ohio and Wisconsin. Durbin said improvements on the 286-mile Amtrak route between Chicago and St. Louis will boost on-time performance, increase travel speeds, and create thousands of jobs. According to U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, he says this project will create nearly 6,000 direct and indirect jobs, decrease delays, and improve performance. High-speed rail projects like this one will ensure that Illinois remains at the center of the nation's infrastructure network, attracting more jobs and making us more economically competitive.
With summer vacation just around the corner for high school kids, there is not very promising outlook for summer employment for Illinois teenagers. For one reason, as a result of the loss of 18,000 jobs because of state budget cuts and the end of federal stimulus money. According to a new report by Northeastern University Center for Labor Market Studies, only one in four 16 to 19-year-olds in the U.S. will find gainful employment this summer. The report, commissioned by a Chicago group, noted a steady deterioration in teenage summer employment over the past decade. In 2000, 45% of teenagers found summer work. By 2010, that figure had dropped to just a little over 25%, with black and Hispanic teens hit the hardest. A group of Chicago teenagers at a hearing on why they want and need summer employment told lawmakers that without jobs, many teenagers may resort to violence, gangs, and drug dealing. Summer jobs can help teens find alternatives to the lower levels of street life they may be exposed to. Jack West, executive director of Chicago's Alternative Schools Network, said that the numbers go beyond recession levels and actually signify a Great Depression for the youth, not only of Illinois, but of our whole nation. Bob?
Okay. Watchdog. This is a story from In These Times, and this says, Watchdogs probe labor abuses in China's tech industry. Says, never underestimate the power of a good public shaming. Western electronics firms were mortified in 2010 by reports of gruesome suicides of young workers in China employed by the multinational tech giant Foxconn. Since the company runs a network of plants that churn out glistening gadgets for Apple, Dell, and Hewlett-Packard, the suicides scandalized tech brands that often market themselves as hip and progressive. The months of damage control that followed led to promises to reform wages and working hours and to establish more worker-friendly factory conditions. But has all that bad publicity paid off for the workers? This week, watchdog groups have released a report to kickstart a global campaign to call attention to ongoing labor issues. The Time to Bite into a Fair Apple campaign hopes to keep the pressure on both Chinese authorities and multinational firms to fulfill promises to make the manufacturing system more humane for hundreds of thousands of young Chinese workers. So far, according to Hong Kong-based Students and Scholars Against Corporate Misbehavior, that's SACOM, S-A-C-O-M, say progress has been inconsistent and inadequate for many workers along China's southern coast. While Apple commends the measures taken by Foxconn to improve working conditions, SACOM finds predicaments of workers remain. Workers always have excessive and forced overtime in order to gain a higher wage. Workers are exposed to dust from construction site and shop floor without adequate protection, and even worse, they are threatened by potential harm of occupational diseases in various departments. Additionally, military-styled management is still in practice, characterized by military training for new workers. A chart outlining the key anticipated reforms catalogs numerous shortcomings. For example, while Apple and Foxconn factory workers were promised across-the-board pay increases, SACOM's probe of factories and interviews with workers found that workers were still unfairly denied overtime pay and wages were sometimes miscalculated. While employees were promised protective gear to guard against hazardous exposures in their factories, SACOM's research revealed that workers did not consistently receive those protections and were not well informed about the chemicals in use. There were cases of employers exploiting some young interns through their training system. Foxconn was also accused of luring in new hires using deceptive recruiting practices. Dave?
Tom, do you have another news story?
No, just my poem.
Okay, very good. We're going to go to a little workers' independent news, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 500 Rite Aid workers took every anti-union tactic and trick that the giant company could throw at them, and after a five-year struggle, they're proud members of the ILWU with their first contract. International Longshore and Warehouse Union spokesman Craig Merrilies.
It took a long time because the company decided to launch an all-out anti-union attack. The remarkable thing is that the workers stood together, fought back, were not intimidated, and despite firings, threats, and other forms of coercion, they stuck together, hung in there, and were able to continue to take action on the shop floor and motivate thousands of community supporters in California and around the country to support them.
So much for the suggestion that if voters actually knew how much Social Security and Medicare contributed to the budget, they'd be willing to cut it. Jesse Russell reports.
A new poll out by Quinnipiac University has some clarifying numbers as we enter the long 2012 election season. Voters overwhelmingly like Medicare. 70% of those polled and told that Medicare was a major part of the federal budget said they were against limiting the program. 72% were against limiting Social Security. However, when the same question was asked for defense funding, 54% of voters polled supported cutting that part of the budget. In a statement, Quinnipiac Polling Assistant Director Peter Brown said his organization wanted to see if voters responded differently if it was made clear how much of the budget those three issues comprised. Voters also told the firm by a margin of 69% to 28%. They support raising taxes for households earning $250,000 or more. Quinnipiac also asked voters how enthusiastic they are regarding the current lineup of Republican presidential candidate potentials. Mitt Romney and Sarah Palin had the highest enthusiasm level, tying with 15%.
The Economic Policy Institute says that as of 2010, the North American Free Trade Agreement had displaced 682,900 U.S. jobs. A new report from EPI says that when NAFTA was proposed, supporters predicted that it would create hundreds of thousands of jobs for Americans. That did not happen. Economists at EPI says despite NAFTA costing rather than creating hundreds of thousands of jobs, nearly identical jobs claims are now being made about proposed NAFTA-style trade agreements. EPI says growing trade deficits nearly always lead to job losses, and the pending Korea-U.S. free trade agreement will likely result in growing trade deficits and job losses for the U.S. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Laborers International Union of North America President Terrence O'Sullivan says it's time for a more radical labor movement in light of the strong attacks on fundamental labor rights. O'Sullivan's remarks came during the 125th anniversary of May Day, commemorated in Chicago's Haymarket Square. It was a rededication of the newly restored monument at the grave of the four Haymarket martyrs, executed in 1887 for the Haymarket bombing. That bombing happened during a rally for the eight-hour day.
Just as the men and women of Haymarket stood united and stood fearless in the face of corporate terror, today we must stand united and stand fearless in the face of corporate tyranny. Instead of being at the wrong end of a Pinkerton's baton, working men and women today are at the wrong end of a lawmaker's gavel or a governor's pen. Targets of wealthy special interests who don't want us standing in the way of their greedy agenda. When we're fighting just to hold on to our very lives, there is no movement too radical and there is no movement too militant.
Yeah. O'Sullivan audio courtesy of WORT Radio in Madison. California is moving toward a universal health care system, but it's not expected to happen quickly. Jesse Russell reports.
On Wednesday, the California State Senate Health Committee passed a bill out of committee that would provide government-funded health care through public-private partnerships. Nearly 100 taxpayers attended the hearing to speak out in support of the legislation, but no taxpayers showed to speak against it. Only four organizations sent representatives to fight the bill. Two of those organizations were the California Association of Insurance and the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, Bill has a little commentary about the second to the last news story about Terrence O'Sullivan from the Laborers International Union of North America.
Yeah, see, he's the president of my union, and the editorial in the last that he wrote in the last edition of our house organ, the Laborer magazine, was about our new code of performance, which is not exactly radical militant action on the part of our union. What the code of performance is, well, I'm going to back up a little bit here. Last year, last summer, I believe it was, got a letter in the mail where the union had this new policy that they want to implement on being fired for cause. And this is also the same man who instituted a drug testing program within the union. Now, that's since gone by the wayside, and I think this code of performance is something to kind of make up for that, because it has to do with being fired for cause. And people might remember that one of the differences between being a union member and being a non-union member is that in the United States, legally, all people are generally at-will employees, which means you can be fired for anything, unless you're part of one of the protected classes, such as gender and so on, race, whatever. Okay, now, what's happened is they got rid of the drug testing policy, and they came up with this new code of performance thing. And anyway, this letter explained how if we get fired for cause, which would be something that would violate the contract, say insubordination, or say flunking a drug test given by the company, and they can do that any way they want to. They can have random tests. The policies are completely up to them. And but anyway, what happens is if you're fired once, then you are off for 3 months. The union will not refer you to another job for 3 months, which is very similar to the old drug testing policy where if you flunked the drug test, you were off for 3 months. Well, the second time you get fired for cause within 2 years means that you are off for 6 months. They will not refer you to a job for 6 months. And the third time is a year, which is really bad because in the locals who use the standard referral system, if you don't work 500 hours a year, then you go down to what's called the B board or the B list, and you're much less likely to get any work, you know, unless there's a big boom going on.
Yeah. I think the fundamental question here.
But wait a minute.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing was they had a piece of paper for me to sign saying that I agreed to this. Well, I did not sign it or turn it in. And nobody ever said anything about it. But I did notice that on our skill sheet, which is something that we fill out that tells them what kind of work that we can and will do, mm-hmm. there was a place to check off for code of performance. Like they expect contractors to be calling in wanting people who have signed up with the code of performance. Mm-hmm. But this, you know, I mean, and then for him to be out talking about how we need radical militant action, you know, and citing the Haymarket martyrs. You know, it's just totally hypocritical and ludicrous.
Yeah, and then the bottom line here, Bill, is who's working for whom? I mean, the thing is the members pay union dues, which pays the salary of everyone from Terrence O'Sullivan on down to your local business agent and stuff. Well, it doesn't sound like they're working for the membership. It sounds like they're working for the contractors, you know. And to me, that's the ultimate problem here. I mean, you know, you don't hire an attorney to go work for the prosecution. You know, or whatever, if you're in a criminal trial. You know, and this is basically, to me, this is what this is. I mean, they're in violation of the whole contractual agreement. I mean, basically, you're paying for them to represent you, but they're not representing the members because the members didn't vote on them. First of all, this was not advocated.
We didn't vote on it, yeah.
Yeah, this was not advocated by the members. It wasn't implemented by the members. The members didn't even have a vote on this.
That's correct. I mean, I don't even think they went through any kind of facade as going through district councils, which is one of their ways that they do a lot of things. It comes out of Washington and goes through the district council. And of course, everybody there votes on everything. And I think what it is that Terrence O'Sullivan spent way too much time with Andy Stern in the Change the Wind Coalition.
Yep, including Doug McCarron of the Carpenters.
Right. And another thing, too, is that the building trades unions have a built-in conflict of interest, where they do not organize employees.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they sign up employers. And what they see their job is selling the union mm-hmm. to the employer.
Basically,
and this makes their job easier. And this is what this is all about, too, is making these people's jobs easier.
Yeah, and as I was told by a business agent of the Carpenters several years ago, we are a business. Excuse me? Since when? And if we are a business, then the members should be the shareholders and be able to vote on all decisions. But since that's not the case, the members don't get to vote on all decisions, what does that make us then? Livestock to be pimped? Because that's exactly what this is. I mean, this whole corporate structure, you know?
Well, actually, I think most corporate shareholders probably have, at this point, more rights than we do and get
to
vote on things. And I mean, I'd like to be able to get proxies from people and vote their vote.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. Well,
but
thanks.
But it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot, Bill. That was very informative stuff. We're going to a little music by the Flowbots, and then we'll be right back with Tom Thomas's Poem of the Week.
to plan an after-school program. A religious fanatic posts footage of an interfaith service project. A group of teenage boys watches a video of a father playing catch with his son. An adult film star paints thumbnail portraits of elderly couples, fully clothed and smiling. A record executive records a demo of his apology. A policeman makes reverse 911 calls, instructing residents to take to the streets. A patriarch reports for duty. She's wearing an orange jumpsuit and holding a picket sign. She's ashamed of her birthplace, but retreat is not an option.
Women and children, frontline, log on, tune in, stand and be counted, wounded. Station in the belly of the vulture, watch your back, there's no civilians. Women, children, frontline, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering, dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Butterfly wing crosswinds send black hawks toward hurricane survivors. Roses sprout from empty lots and sidewalk cracks. Pacifist guerrillas move undetected through concrete jungles. New forms are beginning to take shape. Once occupied minds are activating. People are waking up. The insurgency is alive and well.
Rise of the Phlobots, portrait of the new American insurgent. Rattle and shake the foundations of the world order. Assembly line, consent, resist, refuse, inform, create. Direct love wants to the trenches. Suit up, forge rubble into fortresses. Plaster, cloth, aluminum, broken porcelain, rusted platinum.
We are now at that point in the Labor Hour for the Labor Hour Cultural Corner with Tom's brand new poem of the week, An Ode to Moms.
Men and women work together in most of our jobs that are done, but there's one thing no man can do, that's birth a daughter or a son. A woman's obligation to all the offspring she brings forth gives her the right to be called mom, a title of eternal worth. From when you skinned your little knee to when you graduated school, your mom was right there by your side because you were her little jewel. A mom works hard each day and night to teach her children wrong from right. Sometimes she has to work a job, but still can teach you to fly your kite. We celebrate a Mother's Day, but only one day of the year, and mom should be celebrated every day that you have her here. Whether it was a tummy ache, boogeymen sneaking at night, your mom was there to quell your fears and show you everything's all right. Every single day of the year for mom should be a special day, because without a loving mom, no child would ever find their way. An Ode to Moms was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on May 6, 2010, it's 1 year and 1 day ago, and was brought to you live today, May 7th, 2011, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Yes, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that WEFT is a listener-supported community radio station, and we would not be on the air if it wasn't for you. And therefore, twice a year, and in between occasionally, we ask for the members help us stay on the air by pledging any amount that they can to WEFT Radio. And it also gives them an opportunity at the $40 level and up to be able to vote on the board of directors and other representatives here at WEFT. But anyway, I want to remind you that you're not going to hear anything like public affairs programs like the Labor Hour or Higher Ground or any of the other public affairs programs we have here on corporate radio or television.
Yeah, not even satellite.
That's correct.
Yeah, for all you people, you can get any kind of music on the satellite, that you want.
Mm-hmm.
But you will not get public affairs like this. You will get the people who used to be on Air America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, they're all right, but I mean, they're not talking, you know, real radical. I mean, the farthest you're going to get on there is slightly liberal. Social democratic.
Yeah, yeah. And we like to present, you know, all sorts of alternative views here on WFT on the Labor Hour. So anyway, help us stay on the air. Please call in. What's that number, Bob, if they want to call and make a pledge?
217-359-9338.
Okay. And again, this is the Illinois World Labor Hour, broadcasting from WFT Radio, Champaign, Illinois. And we now like to go to some public service announcements. If you object to the Obama administration's conducting an unjustified war in the Middle East and misrepresenting the reasons for it while doing nothing about the economy except aiding the rich, tell your representatives in Congress. Congressman Tim Johnson and Senators Dick Durbin and Mark Kirk can be reached to the Capitol switchboard at area code 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And that also, in conjunction with this message is brought to you by AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort of Champaign-Urbana, which meets every Sunday at 5 p.m. in the McKinley Foundation at 5th and Daniel Streets in Champaign on the U of I campus. And all visitors are welcome. And also, they present AWARE on the air each Tuesday from 10 to 11 p.m. on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6. And also on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6 on Sundays from 4 to 5 p.m., you can catch Labor's View TV with host Jim Iman and yours truly. And this coming Sunday, there will be the beginning of a two-part series of a film called 9/11, Press for the Truth. It's a story about some 9/11 widows of some of the victims of the 9/11 attack who had to fight tooth and nail in order to get the investigation, the 9/11 Commission report wrenched out of the Bush administration. It took them a year and a half to do this. And then after the Commission report, they were extremely unhappy with the questions they did not even ask and even a lot of their findings. So it's a very good film. And check that out, 9/11 Press for the Truth, this Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Labor's View TV. And the following Sunday, it'll be concluding, and you'll have your host, Jim Iman, and myself with a little commentary. And anyway, just want to start, I guess, you know, we see that a lot's been going on in the news here this week, and particularly the supposed killing of Osama bin Laden. I do stress supposed. But there's also been some other stuff going on, so I'm just going to kind of open it up here for some general discussion. This is a labor issue, believe it or not, because this whole thing with the 9/11 attacks and, again, the supposed person behind it, Osama bin Laden, is the cornerstone of the foundation for this whole war of terror that's been going on now since late 2001, which led also to the invasion of Iraq in early spring 2003. And therefore, I think it needs to be discussed because these wars are draining $2.7 billion a week out of our economy. That's $2.7 billion a week. And this is having a dramatic impact on working people with cutbacks in public sector spending, with attack on public workers and public education in general, denial of health care to millions of Americans. So therefore, it is a very important labor issue that needs to be talked about. So anyway, Bill, some of your thoughts?
Well, what I'm thinking of, you know, I'm reading this announcement here by AWARE, you know, and I know most of these people, and I've been to their demonstrations and such, starting before the invasion of Afghanistan, and also through the times when there were, you know, the huge counter demonstrations where there were probably 300 to 400 people in total, you know, 100 to 200 maybe on each side. But but now it's like, you know, you get the people and they're downtown, a few people, and they got their signs and everybody drives by and honks and everybody agrees.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so what's the point? What's the point of that now? You know, and you start looking at things like the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement and so on and so forth. And, you know, nothing really happened until buildings started being blown up.
You're not advocating,
and
though, of course.
And riots. Well, and there's an old saying, and I believe it was by H. Rapp Brown, nobody would listen to Martin Luther King if it wasn't for the behind him with, I was going to use the N-word there, that's the quote, with a firebomb. You know, and I really am not into violence, but I'm just saying right now, how was this country born? Was this country born by people standing around on street corners with signs? No, it was
saying,
people.
British, please leave our colonies.
Yeah, quit. Yeah. You know, please raise the price on the East India Company so our tea can compete. No, that wasn't it. You know, and that's just it. And there's the famous Mario Savio speech. You know, standing around with a sign is not throwing your body on the gears of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and say these gas prices. People are just, oh, God, I'm so mad about the gas prices.
Yeah,
well, why don't people, you know, I've been boycott and at least pick a gas station. You start with ExxonMobil. And you know, the owner's going to come out, oh, you know, well, that's too bad. He chose to work for them, or she did, you know.
Well, you know, the problem, let's see, where do I start with this? Okay, I guess we'll go back to the beginning here. I don't advocate violence at all, except for self-defense. I do feel a person definitely has a right to defend themselves from being killed or injured.
Okay, not necessarily.
But hold on, let me finish,
violence,
Bill. Let me finish, Bill.
Disobedience.
My model, I should say, how should I put it? My ideal model is what happened in India with the Mahatma Gandhi, and how they basically, it took them a while, but they were able to chase the British out of India eventually by nonviolent but direct action tactics. In other words, they just basically started shutting the country down. And I think that's what has to happen here, is that what would really get the attention and would really put a hurt to the war machine is to affect them in the pocketbook.
Well,
and to make it to where they can't function.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm not necessarily violence, but at least civil disobedience. Don't stand on the sidewalk with a sign, sit down in the middle of the street, and block the traffic. But don't do it in downtown Champaign, because what's the point? You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't mean anything in downtown Champaign. At best, if you did it in front of the federal courthouse in Urbana, it might have some symbolic
thing. Well, not even there.
But you need like a hunt. And you know, and you have these, I don't know. It's just, you know what, shut down Washington, D.C.
There you go.
You know, get 100,000 people, not way over by the Washington Monument.
Yes, walking around in a circle.
Right, invade Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just, you know, I don't know why people think there's never been anything done in this country through just standing around and holding signs and marching and making speeches.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hurt these organizations and people one way or another.
Yes. Well, the civil rights movement, I think, is a perfect case in point. I mean, look at all the hundreds of thousands of people that were, you know, arrested, committed civil disobedience, were arrested and went to jail. I mean, you and I grew up during that, and Bob and Tom, and Tom's a little older than the three of us, so he remembers even better than us.
Yeah.
But I was a child at the time, and I can remember very clearly. And of course, it wasn't celebrated back then. These people were accused of everything from being what, Tom, criminals to communists, pretty much, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and it's, so, you know, the thing is that, you know, Bill, we're basically in a class war right now. And I mean, this has been said from everyone from Warren Buffett to Jim Hightower to other people out there. And we're getting our butts kicked. Class is getting their butts kicked. And this war is one of the biggest cornerstones of why we're suffering now in this country. Everything from the high gas prices to our job losing good paying jobs, the assault on collective bargaining and unions, you name it.
Well, okay. Now look at this. This happened to Madison this spring. Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You get 100,000 people there. Okay.
Yes.
You got 100,000 people there. They got signs. They're yelling, you know, or whatever. Well, business goes on.
Yes.
Business goes on in that Capitol building right there. And nothing has changed except that what they went to protest about has been everything but implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's all going to the recalls of these people.
Oh, the courts,
You know, they were inside the Capitol, but they did not stop business. You know, and you know, and you're going to have to risk have people saying, oh, gosh, well, you're being, you know.
Disruptive.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, that's the only thing. That's like a person I was corresponding with who's a conservative person, you know, like saying, oh, God, how terrible they are or something. And it's just like, well, I don't know. You just, that's just the way it is. And you're going to invite backlash. That's why the labor movement in the United States is so docile right now, is backlash that they're still, that's, it's become part of the culture of the American labor movement, is that you cannot be radical in any way at all. And I don't care what Terrence O'Sullivan says.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, oh, excuse me. I mean, Terrence O'Sellout.
Okay, you know, it's like Mike Griffin was talking about John Sweeney, about, you know, when he was running for the first time for president of the AFL-CIO, how he's talking about, if necessary, we're going to, you know, blockade bridges. And as Mike Griffin said, the only way John Sweeney would ever blockade a bridge is if his limo got a flat tire on the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, and that's true with all these labor leaders.
Well, actually, they had the SEIU under him had in New York, and I think he'd been there, and he's been arrested. But, I mean, it's just not happening. It did not happen. I mean, all we have to
Well, they're not going to do it because, Bill, they're worried about getting sued. They're worried about that. Because of that, they're worried about losing their benefits and their salaries. That's the bottom line.
Well, right, yeah, because that's, see, what can happen is not just suits, but, you know, fines.
Yeah.
Literally fines. And, you know, but that's just the way it is. But, see, that's where you got to start thinking, man. A union is not your marble palace in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a union is the members.
Yes.
A union is the laborers, the Midwest laborers region is not that office building in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And the state AFL, the IFL-CIO is not that building in Springfield. It's the members. And, you know, you should be able to have a union without even having an office, especially with the technology that we have now. You with no assets at all, people ought to be able to run one off their personal computers at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good point, Bill.
You know, I mean, look, you know, like look at our hall out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great place to have that party for Gene last week.
Yes, the May Day party, mm-hmm, his retirement, the wedding anniversary, and May Day celebration. Very good affair, by the way. They were on the radio show, both of them, on Saturday, and the Sunday party was really good. A lot of good stories there. Anyway. But anyway, to get back, I think, Bill, you know, all these are really good points, and I'm, you know, talking with a lot of my coworkers and other people out there. One thing I keep bumping up into, and it's not with everyone, but there's certain people out there that, unfortunately, here we come back to another big problem that's an impediment to us to having any success, is the corporate media. The problem is there's still too many working class people out there that believe every single thing that is uttered by the corporate media, whether it's on CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS. Okay, a perfect case in point here is this recent Osama bin Laden thing that's been going on this week. I mean, I find it really interesting, the fact that, you know, they supposedly killed him, okay, and then dumped his body in the ocean. It's like, excuse me? I mean, you think back. I mean, when Billy the Kid or John Dillinger or someone like that was killed, they put their body on display to show the world that they actually did it.
Right here in the big window on Main Street downtown?
Yes. We have no body. So
Che Guevara.
Yeah, there's another good example. Exactly.
Well, and also now this thing about, well, we don't want to show any pictures and act like we're gloating. And number one, okay, they will say, well, the body has to be disposed of within 24 hours in order to be in accordance with Muslim or Islamic.
Who cares?
And then, you know, and of course, if it is at sea, then you put it at sea. But that will be their excuse. Now, the thing is, I think he should have been, if he was actually there, I think he was dead 10 years ago.
Well, there's a lot
and
of people.
The only thing that lends credence to me that this might have actually happened is that I cannot figure out exactly why they would want to pull it out at this time.
Well, that's a good point. But, you know,
it would be better, but I, you know.
Except that they have met, you know, the opinion polls, people are more turning against the wars, both in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, it doesn't matter.
And they need some kind of success to continue the policy.
But it doesn't matter.
To you, it doesn't.
72% of the people in the United States want higher taxes on the rich.
Yes.
And we just have this article that I pointed out in the Nation magazine right here, and this is a slightly different thing, but it's, I imagine, where now that as nationwide budget protests continue this week, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is prepared to unveil the Obama administration's plan to lower the top corporate tax rates from current 35% to less than 30% and as low as 26%. And they say they want to pay for it by closing loopholes and slashing exemptions. and that Geithner has already begun meeting privately with CEOs, academics, labor unions, and liberal and conservative think tanks, and his aides say he is, quote, encouraged by the response. Yeah, he probably went and talked to Terrence O'Sullivan, and Terrence said, oh, well, that sounds great. And here's the thing, and this was brought up by a liberal talk show host the other night named Norman Goldman, who's somebody worth listening to.
Okay.
And he said, well, they always say that if you raise taxes on corporations, they're just going to pass it on to the customer. And he goes, well, if that's the case, why should corporations care what their taxes are?
Yeah.
Because they can just pass them on, you know?
Which we know is not quite true. They
have everything both ways, you know? And like I'm saying, it doesn't matter what the American people think. It doesn't matter if you're holding a sign on a street. It doesn't matter if you're making a speech. It just doesn't matter. These wars will just keep going on.
Unless what?
Unless, you know, you really make the system hurt one way or another, bring it to a stop. What we're missing here, Kent State. Wasn't that May 4th?
Yes.
Was that 1970?
That's correct.
You know, we've missed that.
And Jackson State.
You know, and those are the... and then, I don't know, and then... Like I said, not violence, but there was just those mass demonstrations that had to be put down. I mean, those are real demonstrations. They were holding things up. That's what you have to do. Saturday on a street corner doesn't cut it. That's not bringing the machine to a halt.
They need to be in the streets on Saturday, not on the curbs with signs. Yeah. Get out there. Get 1,000 people out there to sit down in the streets. That'll get their attention.
Well, I mean, you know, but it needs to be like more, you know, champagne.
It needs to be targeted. You know. It needs to be specifically targeted against military bases, arms manufacturers, and those politicians in Washington, D.C. I think it needs to be, I don't think sitting in front of the courthouse in Champaign-Urbana does any good. It's not the right focus. Nothing there is conducted. It helps the war machine. It has to be specifically targeted at those who are profiting from or participating in the wars.
Yeah, and because everybody agrees now we don't want to be in these wars, but it's become kind of the background noise to our lives. It's sort of like the standard radiation being put out by these bricks and stuff. You know, it's the background radiation.
Yes,
it's not the Fukushima.
But getting back to my point about, you know, people. I mean, if you're listening to this program, then we're preaching the choir here about you know, the corporate media, I believe. However, I mean, I find so many people out there, not just working class people, but people that are supposedly left liberals or whatever, they're supposedly so well educated, buy into a lot of this crap. They just pair it out in the corporate media. I mean, it's like, you know, with the famous Nazi propaganda minister Goebbels once said, if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes truth to most people. And I think this is a perfect case. I mean, it's like, why is it anyone who's halfway informed would believe that Osama bin Laden was actually killed this last week, when first of all, he didn't produce a body, and second of all, and most importantly, all the times in the past they've lied to us. Perfect. I mean, you know, the American mass media, this is a good, I want to read this real quick. The American mass media, the corporate media, are like tired old dogs, dutifully fetching official lies on command and dropping them like bones at the feet of an unsuspecting public. We, in turn, reward them by buying both the products and the myths they sell us. Eventually, however, the products fail and the myths unravel. When the government's popularity wanes sufficiently, despite the support of a compliant press, even old dogs can come up with new tricks, revealing the lost art of investigative reporting. And then, I mean, two cases in point. The weapons of mass destruction that were supposedly in Iraq. You know, they invade Iraq based on that rationale. And then what? There were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Then we got two other cases after the invasion. That is the bogus case of the Jessica Lynch fable.
Yeah, and she's actually really embarrassed by that.
Yes, and for those who don't remember, Jessica Lynch was a woman soldier in the U.S. Army.
Probably like the equivalent of a private.
Yes,
in
he
rank,
was in a convoy truck, and it was they got hit by shell fire, and the truck overturned, and she I think broke a few bones and stuff. Was unconscious. She was taken prisoner by Iraqi soldiers, and unlike the original story, supposedly she was beaten, tortured, and raped, and held in captivity. Well, in fact, and that she fought them off bravely with an M16 and fought courageously.
She ran out of bullets.
And she ran out of bullets and was captured. This, that, and the other, and then supposedly. They went in and rescued her in a daring raid that they made a videotape of. Sound familiar?
Right, they had
a
video
videotape
crew, man. They had a reality show.
Well, that's the thing is, after about a month, we find out from Jessica Lynch herself, as well as some real investigative journalists, that this whole story was a lie, that she was actually taken by Iraqi soldiers to a hospital. She wasn't beaten, raped, and tortured. She was actually taken well
they
care of.
They tried to take her back,
and
I
they
believe.
Even tried to take yeah. her back at one
the
point.
The doctors did.
And were shot at, you know. And anyway, when the American soldiers came in, she was in a hospital bed. The only one in the hospital were doctors and nurses. But they still they basically produced this bogus rescue scene, you know, and put the videotape out there to fabricate this lie. And Jessica Lynch, when she got back to the United States, it was about a month later, she basically, and even testified before Congress, that this was all fable. It was all a lie. It was all fabrication. Another good one here that's happened is the Pat Tillman story. I mean, man, oh man! I mean, that's a really interesting story, and I don't know if we really have time to go into it today. But basically, Pat Tillman was a professional football player. Yeah, after 9/11, he volunteered to go into the military. Was in Afghanistan or in Iraq, then in Afghanistan, and basically, they said he was killed in a firefight with the enemy. Well, it turns out he was shot in the back of the head, or in the back with an M16. And as they tried to do some investigation, they found that pretty much. Concluding that he was killed by somebody in the U.S. military.
Well, and also, he was also becoming known for beginning to read like Noam Chomsky and other
yes.
radical left things.
Well, he had that's a good point, Bill, because actually he had a he was set up to have an interview with Noam Chomsky and. I was just trying to find I've got some info here, and I'm trying to.
Well,
of course,
so it
I
looks like
it.
You know, folks, it, you know, we have a possible assassination scenario.
Yes, yes, because he realized the war was all lies. He was going to come back to the United States and start with Noam, basically doing an interview with Noam Chomsky and televising this. And it appears that he might have been killed for that reason. So again, but nevertheless, again, another.
But
lie.
The thing is, here's the thing about both of those cases: Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman. Probably 90% of the people in the United States heard the original stories.
And still believe them.
And not, the you know, the corrections always come in a little thing in the corner of the paper.
On page 12.
Yeah. And that's...
Well, that's... yes, yes. And that's why it's so important to tune into alternative media in the U.S. and also foreign news sources like Al Jazeera and The Guardian, really excellent British newspaper, which, by the way, broke a story this week about that photo of Osama bin Laden that is a fake, that any 12-year-old could do it on his own laptop. In fact, my daughter's done it before. She's more faces. Her face...
Well, that photo had been around for a long time, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that proves nothing. And the fact there's no body makes it even more suspicious. Yeah. But anyway, the main point here is...
There's no body tells me that there was no killing.
Yeah. But nevertheless, the main point here is people don't believe anything that comes out of that corporate media, or especially if their sources are the White House, the State Department, or the Pentagon, because they've lied to us time and time and time again. And that's the point here. And that's why the alternative media and foreign media sources are so important. Get on that internet. Check out this information and tune in to Democracy Now!, Grit TV, as well as Labor's View TV and the Illinois Labor Hour. Well, anyway, I think we've run out of time.
Oh, yeah, and
any
I would also,
comments?
Dave, yes. mm-hmm. Go to radioforall.net. There's a lot of really excellent programs, including archives of the Illinois World Labor Hour.
Yes.
The Illinois Labor Hour. And if you want to go way back, search for the Eastern Illinois Labor Journal.
Oh, yeah, that was the original name
of the Labor Central Hour. Illinois Labor
yes,
Journal.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Peter majored in physics, not English. So.
Okay, very good. Okay, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been the Illinois World Labor Hour on WFT Radio Champaign, Illinois. Tune in next Saturday at the usual time, 11 a.m. to noon. Meantime, take care and work.